Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Hello, Sarah.
How are you?
I'm going to try really hard not to be out of breath for this podcast because I totally forgot that we were actually being timely with our recording today because of holiday plans this week, and was working out when you texted me and said, "Where are you?" So,
well, and I'm still getting over this cold, so I was a little eager to get going on time today so that I can go to bed later. I don't know if you can hear my voice or if it's just my ears that make my voice sound hoarse, but yeah, I mean, I'm on the upswing, but this has been a pretty bad one, so.
I'm sorry to hear you're not well. I can hear a little bit in your voice, but you sound like you'll be all right. You'll make it through.
I think I'll survive, yeah.
So, this week is Christmas for our listeners. I know Christmas hasn't happened for us yet, but my family...
It's coming fast, though.
It's coming. It's coming so fast. We spent the weekend finishing up all of our shopping, and we're going to spend the evening when we're done wrapping, because we are going to our holiday tradition of Great Wolf Lodge this week and coming back on Christmas Eve. So we would like everything to be done when we come back. So we've got some really great posts on the blog for people who are interested. I know that a lot of people travel to places like Great Wolf Lodge or even like Disney and places like that, that you would think you can't kind of be paleo or semi-paleo when doing those sort of things. But we've got a whole bunch of food prepped. We've got our bags packed. We've got, you know, all kinds of goodies prepped, which we have blogged about before. And it's actually where the recipes for our nut-free Lara Bar wannabe balls came from, which are some of our most popular recipes, because we go with friends who have severe nut allergy, and we wanted to make snacks that everybody could eat or that, you know, wouldn't put him into anaphylactic shock in the hotel room.
Great.
So yeah, we've got some prep underway. We're going to finish tonight and hopefully enjoy some solid family time, not worrying about anything for the next 3 days, which is about the best vacation I could think of.
That's exactly my plan, except for the part where I'm not going anywhere. So the plan is to do, like, the most exciting thing would be like walk to the local playground with the kids and to just hang out, play with our new cat, and just, yeah, relax and sleep lots and get ready for the big guy's visit on Thursday.
Don't take your new cat to the playground, though.
No. It's we actually opened up the house today, and so we'd been doing this like slow introduction of the cat to the house and the cat to Peanut, our other cat. And we finally like completed that introduction, and they've agreed to leave each other alone.
That's
not
a good sign.
Anything to do with each other.
Only a couple days in, that's a good sign.
Yeah, no, they were definitely, you know, they were not acting aggressive towards each other, but they basically both seem to resent each other and be pouting. But they'll stare each other down in the kitchen, but they're not like growling or hissing or have their hackles up or anything. So we've opened up the house, and tonight will be the first night where Tilly isn't sleeping in the office. I mean, I'm sure she'll end up sleeping in the office because she really sees it as being her territory in here, but she could sleep elsewhere in the house. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think we're just, you know, for the sake of her adjusting to the family, but also we're all getting over colds and we're all pretty run down. I think we just all need some chill time and like completely unstructured. Okay, well, my 7-year-old would really like a completely structured day, but she doesn't get it. So the rest of us want unstructured time, so we're all going to get what we want. And she's just going to read the 12 library books that they got at the library yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah, well, she's a reader.
We definitely need to rest up because you and I are going back on tour like a week from when this airs.
If I'm not better by then... I don't have a second part to that sentence.
You will be better by then.
I will be so frustrated.
You're going to be eating
I've been sick so much of the time since we got back from the last tour, so I'd really like to not still be sick by the time I'm traveling again.
You can do what I did, which is eat like an entire container of chicken livers before you go.
I have been eating crazy amounts of good stuff, and it's... Do you know what I found? I discovered
what?
Canned cod livers.
Really? Fermented or regular?
No, like it's the liver. It's not. So, okay. So here's a little minor pet peeve from me is when we call fermented cod liver oil a whole food supplement, it's not a whole food. It's the liver. It's the oil extracted from the liver. So you don't have all of the beneficial stuff that you would have if you ate the whole liver. So I like specifically went to figure out if you can actually buy cod liver and not just cod liver oil. And so you can get it canned and you can get it canned in its own oil. King Oscar makes a really good one, and it's seasoned with peppercorns and bay leaves. So the pepper would make it not necessarily autoimmune, but it's whole peppercorns. You can easily just not eat them when you're opening up the can. So if you are autoimmune protocol and you're still in that elimination phase and you're avoiding pepper, like I think this would still probably qualify as a good food because you can easily pick the pepper out. And it's like mild tuna tasting with the texture of pate. Like it's so good.
Is it like the texture of a mussel?
No. It's like the texture of like it's soft like pate. Like a you know, like the spreadable, like chicken liver mousse.
I don't know how I feel about that.
It's soft, and then it doesn't taste livery at all. It tastes fishy. But it's actually kind of mild.
Did you put it on like plantain crackers or cucumbers or something?
So I've had it on celery, I've had it on sliced apple, and I've had it on plantain chips.
How was the apple? How'd that go?
My preference was on top of the plantain crackers.
Yeah, I could see the salty being better with the bay leaf than the apple.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure I would eat anything with plantain crackers, though, because
right?
they're bomb. So, yeah, if you give me a choice of anything, eat this with anything or eat it with plantain crackers, there's like one clear choice for me. But yeah, it's really good, and I'm getting it from Amazon Subscribe and Save.
Sweet. All right, we're gonna put a link in the show notes, and I'm gonna order it. So when I come back, it's gonna be new, here.
Like, and it's a superfood.
We're gonna make it sell out because when people hear this, right. They're all gonna go. But well, I gotta get on it before the rest of the podcast right. listeners.
I still
want
to be able to get some. And it's a superfood. It's liver from fish, so it's like high in everything.
Like triple superfood.
It's so palatable. Like it's because it's not livery. So if people don't like liver taste, like this, it's fishy taste. I mean, if people also don't like fishy taste, I can't help them. But yeah, I'm like, it's like my new, I say new discovery. I actually probably discovered it months ago. I'm just now bringing it up on the podcast.
Sarah, I'm super excited that you shared this information finally.
Right. I apologize for my.
I wish I would have known when I was at your house. I could have had some.
You totally could have had some. I had some here. And plantain chips.
All right. Well,
there you go.
So let's, I have one announcement for people. But before I do that, I do want to tell people that we are doing a topic-related semi-structured show today, but when Sarah and I were talking about what we wanted to share, because this is airing the day after Christmas and entering that period of time where everybody has cookies, cakes, pies, and breads left over from the holidays and tempting you, and you have a tendency to say, oh, I'll just finish these up and start again in the new year, we thought maybe we would do a show about recovery from the perspective of getting back on the wagon and the emotional and physical effects of kind of what Sarah calls indulging versus, you know,
Derailing.
There you go. So with that in mind, we do have, Sarah and I both have an announcement to share with something that we think will absolutely help you get on track for now or New Year's, or in the future. But we talked earlier on the podcast about how we had put together a resource of a bundled resource for people to purchase, and it is now official and live and formal. Go buy it if you would like to. It's 40 different resources, from online magazines to meal plans to ebooks, workshops. It's everything from, you know, cleaning supplies to essential oils to beauty care, recipes on how you can kind of choose to set your life on a healthier path going forward. And we specifically put it together and worked with the people who are contributing and collaborating with us so that it would be available in this time, which I think is the most vulnerable for people. And it was really important for me because I remember what it was like starting paleo and trying to wade my way through things. And even now, I think there's more conflicting information about what is or isn't paleo. And we wanted to offer a myriad of resources for people, which is essentially the cost of one paper book. Like Sarah and I's books are both $39, and this bundle is $39. But you get 40 online resources of varying types from different authors that can, you know, help you choose what you could perhaps like most going forward. So with that in mind, if you're interested, you can check out the Family Resolution Revolution bundle, and links are in the show notes of our blogs, but also, you know, there's the website and all kinds of information. And by doing so, you don't just support Sarah or I, you support all the contributors who put their hard work into these resources to help everyone have a healthier lifestyle. So I talked a little bit about how we aim to do that last week, and I'm excited to share that with everyone. And I hope that if you're a podcast listener, you're probably into online e-type things, and it is only a 10-day sale. So if you're hearing this, you probably want to take advantage to go and do it now before it ends on January 4th, 2015. Will be the last day of the bundle. You saw a little bit of it. What did I miss, Sarah? Anything?
No, I'm excited about it. I think it's a great resource, and it's been actually quite a while. I think my fans probably know that I'm really, really selective about what bundles I endorse, and certainly what bundles I contribute to. And so, I mean, this was, I didn't just contribute to it because it was you. I mean, I can say no to you, you know. But because I thought it was a really good bundle, and I really liked where it was going, and I thought it was just going to be a really, really great resource. And so for me, that was sort of like a no brainer in terms of contributing to it and helping to promote it. So I think it's awesome, and I'm excited to see it launch. It's going to be cool.
Sweet. Yeah. So go check it out. Thank you. And we have some fantastic resources and aims that you might not have heard of. So from everywhere, from Melissa Jewell-Wen's Well Fed 2 and Sarah's new ebook to our three-phase paleo and a whole bunch of real food, healthy lifestyle resources. So some of the things that I'm most excited about are the things that aren't even specifically paleo that I think a lot of the community could benefit from knowing about. Like, there's a GAPS freezer book, you know, helps you put together meals that you can freeze that are all GAPS friendly. There's a FODMAP AIP ebook. There's, you know, like all the lifestyle books that I mentioned. So if you think it's just paleo, it's not. There's all kinds of stuff in there, from just being real foods related, like, warning, it's not completely paleo, but most of it is, because there are a lot of real food resources that we could benefit from, and you can take the 90% of great things that those people are doing and leave the 10% that you don't want to incorporate into your own lifestyle. So, and it's a great resource for also those people in your life that are thinking about doing a New Year's resolution, and you want to encourage them down this real foods, paleo-friendly path. This could be a really great resource to direct them to.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, people are getting more into bundles as gifts now than they used to. I mean, bundles are starting to become a more common thing, and people actually can get a real sense of, like, how they work. But the bundles, the gift thing, is just, to me, it's such a cool idea, because you really get to give a huge amount of resources all in one. I am being distracted by a furry cuteness.
All right. So before Sarah's further distracted, perhaps we should talk about some of the emotional things that came up this week for both Sarah and I, and how we think that we can apply that to helping you guys in making or implementing some of those recommendations, or just things that we've learned along the way, or even that we learned from some of our listeners and some of our social media followers. Because I know for me, earlier this week, I shared about how I had really been struggling. And really, honestly, I've been struggling since I came back from tour. And I don't know if that's kind of when it hit for you as well, Sarah. But, you know, tour really took me off path. Like, before tour, I was working out regularly and I was eating really well. And I had a huge amount of stamina and a great immune system, so that when I was gone for 2 weeks straight with 4 hours of sleep every night and, you know, literally one meal that wasn't pre-made bars or something out of my bag, and all of those, almost all of those, were eaten out at restaurants, you know, for me to have, quote unquote, survived that 2 week period and come back, and I didn't have a huge autoimmune flare, I didn't have, you know, some sort of illness or whatever, like, I felt really great about my system and the things that I've implemented in my life to boost my immune system before I left. And when I came back, all those things, you know, helped me through. But what it didn't help was that I was completely sleep deprived. I was overwhelmed. I was super stressed because I had like 2 weeks of catch up, both with my day job and with the blog, and the kids missed me and the husband missed me. And it was like, everybody wanted me all at once. And all I wanted to do was sleep. And yeah, it was really, really, really difficult for me to kind of realize the problem that I had put myself in until I was a couple of weeks in being back and saying, oh my gosh, like, I'm not like making good choices with my food. I'm staying up too late, trying to catch up on stuff. I'm feeling torn in all these different directions, and I'm not able to give anyone the direct attention that I'd like to. And all the while just feeling really negative about everything. Like, I had gotten into a really negative headspace, which happens to me when I'm not doing all the right lifestyle factors. And the thing that helps me personally is kind of acknowledging that it's happening and then coming up with a plan and like, okay, what am I going to do? And I shared that in media, which isn't very easy to do, but it's helpful for me for twofold. One, it helps me because it holds me accountable. Once I put it out there and tell people that I want to do something different and better, then it's a lot easier to stick to knowing that I said I was going to do that. And two, it gives me encouragement and support from the people around me, both from the paleo community as well as real life friends and family. So, you know, I reached out for help. I talked to Matt. I talked to my old workout partner and Strong Woman podcast partner, Vivian, and asked her if she would come over and work out with me sometimes, and really just reached out for help. And that communication was honestly the trigger. And for me, it's like, you take one step and then you take another step and then you take another step, and it snowballs in a positive direction. Whereas, you know, I was on a path where it was snowballing in a very, very negative direction. And it's only been like 4 or 5 days. It's like night and day. It's amazing how much better I feel kind of getting that off my shoulders and allowing myself to not worry about some things and to, you know, focus on working out and taking care of myself. And it's allowed me to be more there and available for the people around me, which, I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record and we say this all the time, that you can't really be there for other people if you're not taking care of yourself. And I had, without realizing it, gotten into that rut where I was, you know, so worried about everybody else and what needed to be done that I hadn't been working out and I hadn't been taking care of myself the way that I really needed to. So, I know, Sarah, you kind of had a similar post this week. So what we thought we could talk about are some of those factors and some of the scientific things behind how this happens, so that if you're feeling that way right now, or if you're feeling that way as the next week or two approaches, with all the goodies that you'll have before New Year's, that maybe you can find some ideas and inspiration to get yourself kind of back on the wagon, so to speak.
Yeah. What I talked about this week was sort of another side of the same coin, which was more, you know, as we go into the holidays, that it's okay. It's okay to indulge, and it's okay to have a treat, and it's okay to make that choice, but to be really, really aware of where that line is between indulging in a treat and derailing and falling off the wagon and starting to follow that sugar roller coaster where you're eating so much sugar that you're having the sugar crashes, and then you're craving more sugar, and then you're not sleeping well, and so then you're tired, and then your cravings are, you know, higher, and then your stress response is higher, so then your cravings are higher, and it becomes this, you know, negative feedback loop where everything's feeding into that sort of complete loss of control. And so, you know, I think that when we talk about treats during the holidays, and, you know, the fact that this show is airing on Boxing Day, people have kind of already made their decisions. But the post that I had on Facebook really talked about that it's okay. It's okay to have a treat, to have an indulgence, to make some, you know, paleo-friendly, you know, grain-free Christmas cookies, or even do something gluten-free. Or if you handle gluten, like, eat a Western food, because there are some people who really don't have overt symptoms after they have gluten. So just sort of knowing where you are on that spectrum and then making a choice accordingly, but that it's okay to choose to indulge, and then to just be really, really aware of the loss of control aspect. So, you know, for me, you know, going into that decision, you know, the holidays are coming, and I've got these, you know, parties that I'm going to, and we're going to have a plate of cookies for Santa, and we're going to have dessert. What am I personally going to choose to do, and make it a choice, and make it an intentional, and make it so that you totally enjoy every second of whatever that treat is, but that you're exerting portion control and you're exerting restraint. So it doesn't become, well, I'm just going to grab one more cookie. Or now I'm going to grab a cookie every time I walk past the plate on my way through the kitchen. Or now, normally I wouldn't eat after supper, but now I'm going to stay up late with a movie and I'm going to eat all of this other junk food. And not letting it get to that point of eating reflexively, stress eating, eating to keep yourself awake, eating to be social, you know, all of these bad eating habits that are correlated with weight gain and obesity, and are correlated with the types of struggles that that people who have issues with being overweight or being obese tend to have. And not that all of us have all of these issues, but there's usually some bad eating habits that really amount to sort of mindless eating or uncontrolled eating or compulsive eating. So, you know, make the choice to have a treat, and don't feel guilty about it. It's okay to have a treat. It's okay to not be perfect, and it's okay to be human, but to not make that become the slippery slope and not allow that to completely derail you so that you end up having to, like, clamber back on the bandwagon weeks later. And that's, I think, sort of the other side, the sort of the preventative measure side of sort of the post that you posted this week. I thought it was kind of interesting that we were both sort of approaching the same topic from these two different angles.
Yeah, I think, you know, specifically to the post that I wrote is, I think, very similar to what you said. Like, yes, it's you're trying to catch it on the front end, but if you catch it on the back end, you know, this idea of justification is something that I see much more seldom than I would like. And it comes from a place of so many of us having been previously addicted to or disordered eating with these hyper palatable foods that can cause disordered eating and can cause that mindlessness, or you eat even after you're full because it tastes good. And I think for me, I approached it from the perspective of I have that history, and I have that that just is not something that I think will ever go away, unfortunately. I mean, I was so obese and so unhealthy for so long that it is the state that my body really goes to when I am especially stressed or tired. And I think that that's for a lot of us. And instead of justifying emotional eating by saying I've had a bad day, it's not that anyone should feel personal guilt or there should be this like negative campaign, but there also shouldn't be a I'm going to justify bad behavior because I deserve it sort of campaign. You know, if you choose to make a choice, that's it, period. End of story. You chose to make a choice. There's no emotional baggage attached to the food that you may or may not consume. And I think the choice to make here is understanding that and then saying, okay, I made that choice. I don't want to continue to make that choice. I want to continue to feel my best. What choice am I going to make next time to put me back on a path of the success, how I define it? And I think it's a really thin gray area that, you know, I weave in and out of all the time. I'm nowhere near perfect, and I have this struggle regularly. I'm happy to report that I have it much less often than I used to have, but this time in particular is a very difficult time of year for me, just holiday stress, and I had a, you know, family death around this time, and ever since then it's been really difficult for me. And I just feel like, you know, we all have triggers in our own life, and figuring out how you want to handle them and then kind of learning from it and moving forward is what I termed self-respect. And I think I've talked about that here on the podcast before. And I've, you know, I just tried to articulate that in writing because I don't want people to think that I'm associating, you know, less than perfect food choices with some sort of negative connotation, because I think there's enough paleo police in the world. I don't want to be one. But at the same time, you know, if you want to be your healthiest, then eating a paleo cookie every time you walk through the kitchen isn't going to get you there. So it's a matter of what choice do you want to make? And I think the perspective that you're coming from, Sarah, in this mindset of deciding what it is you're going to do and making kind of, I don't want to say strategic choices, but mindful decisions about what that is, and not, you know, mindlessly eating just because something is highly palatable, is a really great approach.
Thank you. I mean, I think that one of the key things that we're talking about in common, sort of whether you're coming at it from a, you know, proactive side, or whether you're coming at it from a recovery, get back on the bandwagon side. And sometimes you can be proactive and still end up having to do the get back on the bandwagon side, right? That totally happens, especially when you have a history of obesity. But I think that the common theme we're talking about is not feeling guilt. And I think that that having that, there's this emotional side to overeating and this sort of craving satisfying eating, like even if it's not really excessive volume, that this type of eating where it's really craving driven rather than nutrient driven. I think that what helps you be successful in being proactive, and then also what helps you get back on the bandwagon efficiently on the other side when being proactive didn't work so well, is this idea of dropping the guilt, dropping the excuses, but not perseverating, not feeling bad, not feeling like, you know, I'm a horrible person because I couldn't control my eating for a month. Like that's not going to help it, you get back on the bandwagon. It's not going to help you recover. It's not going to prevent you from making the same mistake again in your future. And I can tell you from personal experience as a binge eater and a overeater and a food addict that, you know, it's not a, you give it up once and you never fall back into that cycle again. It requires sort of a constant dedication. And I think that feeling of guilt and blame is the first thing that you have to let go of in order to be able to sort of successfully move beyond the emotional ties to eating. And it's tough. It's really hard to let go of that feeling. And I don't have any particular tricks other than to say, like, work on it. Like, whether it's, you know, meditation, like you can do like forgiveness meditations, you can do, you know, self-appreciation type meditations. And those things might be really, really helpful in terms of, you know, just adjusting the mindset so that, you know, as you're making choices moving forward, they're not clouded by those negative emotions. Because negative emotions, you know, when you're feeling negative emotions, you're actually changing your brain chemistry. And you're changing your brain chemistry in a way that makes it a lot harder to make those positive, healthful choices, right? Like this is how eating becomes an addiction in the first place. And I, to drop some science now, I've been actually researching food addiction for what'll probably be a 5 or 6 post series coming up in the new year, probably January, February. There's going to be a big series on my blog. And one of the things that I've been really, really interested in is the brain chemistry side. And I think we've talked a lot about the effect of, you know, indulging in these types of cravings on hormones, on blood sugar, on insulin, on leptin, on cortisol, on thyroid hormone, on sex hormones, and how that feeds into that cycle. But it's something that I've been, you know, really keenly interested in understanding more is how it actually affects brain chemistry. And so there's this huge body of scientific literature that actually is showing that the pattern of dopamine receptors in a person with either binge eating disorder or obesity, and those are not necessarily the same thing. You can be obese and not have binge eating disorder. You can have binge eating disorder and not be obese. But that in both of those health conditions, there's this pattern of dopamine receptors that is exactly the same as you see in alcoholics and drug addicts and smokers. And there's this chemical addiction that's going on, and what it's impacting in the brain is the reward center. So we're getting the same type of messed up, like not normal, abnormal brain chemistry reward system from food as a heroin addict gets from heroin. And that is a really, really important thing to understand, is that, you know, that there's this majority of people with obesity and binge eating disorder, of which I had both, who have food addiction. And food addiction is a real thing. We can measure what's going on in the brain and show that food addiction is a thing. And unlike heroin, there's no methadone, right, for food addiction. There's no go cold turkey, you know, go into the hospital, go cold turkey, get through the bends, whatever. And then you're on the other side and you're just faced with not having to do heroin again, because you need to eat food. But you need food to survive. You can't, there's no gold cold turkey, and there's no like patch to help you quit smoking. There's nothing like that. A lot of people find low carb is helpful because it handles at least the insulin swings side of it. But then if you go too low carb, that can cause a whole pile of hormonal issues that aren't helping. And a lot of people find that paleo helps. But when you're doing a diet like that to treat food addiction, you're not really changing the eating disorder aspect. You're just switching the eating disorder. There's a huge body of literature also showing that people with, there's a huge percentage of people with one eating disorder who end up spending their whole lives just switching between eating disorders. So, you know, they'll be morbidly obese for a while and they'll be anorexic for a while and then they'll have bulimia for a while. And that there's this brain chemistry and it's almost certainly linked to this addiction side, this food addiction side of the brain chemistry, that means that it's really easy for us to go from obesity to losing weight, but we lose weight via orthorexia. And so it's something that I think a lot of us struggle with in when we come to a paleo diet from a perspective of wanting to lose weight, is that while changing diet and you know, the nutrient density of the paleo diet does actually improve brain health because it does reduce inflammation in the brain. It does improve that the strength of the blood vessels. You're getting more fat, so you're able to produce better neurotransmitters. And it really can help with mental health from a nutrient standpoint. It doesn't help with mental health from an emotional standpoint. And then a lot of us have these sort of leftover emotional, these eating disorder issues that still need to be addressed. It doesn't just get magically fixed because we find this healthy diet and we give up gluten and we're, you know, eating all these nutrients and long chain omega-3 fats. And I think that's something that is perhaps not talked about very much in the paleo community, because we talk so much about what a great diet this is for weight regulation. You know, if you're underweight, you gain weight. If you're overweight, you lose weight. And we talk about hormones, we talk about insulin, we talk about nutrients. And we don't necessarily talk about the fact that there's this huge body of research showing that just opportunistic overeating. So we're surrounded in our society by highly palatable foods, foods that are engineered to be addictive, foods that are engineered so that you'll buy them, that you'll love them so much that you'll buy them and you'll want more, right? That's, it's not that these companies are being, you know, somehow, you know, conspiring to make us unhealthy. They just want the market share, and the way they get the market share is by making food that we want to buy over and over and over again. And so this opportunistic overeating of this highly palatable food is probably what's causing the changes in our brains that's causing food addiction. And it turns out that those changes in our brain may not fix themselves very easily. It may take a very, very long time for those things to go away. And there may be a genetic component. So there may be a genetic predisposition. But one of the things that I found absolutely fascinating as I was researching this topic more and more was that the way that our food reward system breaks down is completely counterintuitive for me. So I would have thought that as a person with a food addiction and a person with, you know, a history of obesity, a history of binge eating disorder, that I'm getting an exaggerated reward response to food. And that's what's causing that addiction, right? Is I'm getting this great reward response, right? Like I'm getting high off food, right? And that's why I want more and more and more. And that's what my intuition sort of told me what was happening. And what we actually know now from studies, you know, based looking at brain chemistry, is it's the complete opposite. So when you have food addiction, you actually have a blunted reward response to food. And this has been measured in people with obesity and binge eating disorder. And so what it means is, in order to get that feeling of satisfaction, in order to get a normal dopamine response to food, you actually have to eat more. And that's what's sort of propelling overeating, because you're sort of eating to get this sort of, you know, baseline level of dopamine response to food. And it may be that there are genetic factors or potentially epigenetic factors, which then can, you know, make things like BPA and toxins like that can be, you know, potential culprits in causing this change in genetics that's making us susceptible to things. So it's a really, really big field of research, and there's a lot of little details, many of which there's just sort of the beginning of the understanding. But what it's showing is that there's this change in brain chemistry that's causing food addiction that makes some of us sort of more susceptible to derailing when we indulge. I mean, that was a lot of science that basically ended with that main point. So being aware of that emotional response to food, of that addiction to food, because that should be informing people's choices in terms of how they indulge and how they treat, and also be something that they, you know, need to be aware of, and just in terms of the efforts to getting back on the bandwagon. Because when you're talking about recovering from food addiction and you've just derailed and you've, you know, been eating every sugary thing in sight for, you know, between Thanksgiving and New Year's, then getting back on the bandwagon is not just a matter of, okay, it's New Year's Day, therefore I'm not going to eat sugar anymore. I'm just going to do this sugar detox and I'll be done. Because you're dealing with psychological addiction and you're dealing with all of that brain chemistry and you're dealing with this blunted reward system. So then it becomes really, really important, you know, to do the nutrient density thing, because that does get you a fair amount of the way, you know, towards health when you're, you know, trying to recover your mental health, but to really be looking at the lifestyle aspects. So changing your habits, getting lots of sleep, getting activity, managing stress, all of those are feeding into the brain chemistry and feeding into neurotransmitter production in a way that's going to help with the, you know, discipline aspect of, you know, getting yourself, you know, back on plan. That was a long sciencey ranty thing, wasn't it?
I love your sciencey ranty things. And I think it's super helpful for people to understand that there is a biological mechanism both that contributes to the emotional side, as well as the physical side. Because, like you said, I know that we talk about it, but I don't know that a lot of people are talking about it. And I think because you and I both have the experience of having disordered eating previously, that it's something we feel comfortable talking about from the perspective of experience. But for a lot of people in the paleo community who came to it, you know, with minor health ailments, who are already kind of fit, that then, you know, kind of peaked their health, it's difficult to talk on a topic you don't know about, which is how I feel about, for example, paleo pregnancy. Like, I can postulate about it, but I don't actually know anything about a paleo pregnancy. So I think that, I know for me, it is really helpful to think about those kinds of scientific factors. And it puts me in the mindset of like, okay, I'm going to beat this thing that, you know, is trying to take a hold of me. What are the things that I can do to do that? And I just decide, okay, today I'm going to drink more water. Okay, tomorrow I'm going to go to bed by such a time. The next day I'm going to do this other thing. And, you know, like, I come up with a plan and then it helps me kind of stick to it. And then, you know, 3 or 4 days in, I get to give myself a huge pat on the back and I feel so much better. And that helps my emotional health. I feel more confident and comfortable and encouraged. And then it starts that positive snowball that I was talking about. And so I think it's super helpful for people to understand that there is a huge amount of scientific value in making that effort.
Yeah. And I think that it's mostly important to understand that it's multifactorial. So it's mental health, but it's hormone health and it's nutrient status. And so those things, you know, there's a lot that you can do with your diet in terms of supporting that. So focusing on the nutrient dense foods that we talk about all the time. But then, you know, I loved that you've got this sort of like step by step, but it's lifestyle factors. So there's, you know, a huge amount of research showing that not getting enough sleep and or being stressed makes you more uninhibited with your food choices. So it makes you more likely to, you know, sway to, oh, okay, oh, just this one time. And it's really amazing how quickly, like, not looking after your sleep or not looking after your stress can set in and affect how you're eating. So there's studies that show that one night of 4 or 5 hours sleep will make women are more susceptible. So women will eat 20 to 50% more from one night of not enough sleep. They'll eat that much more calories the next day. And so for me, sleep is always like, that's the number one thing. When my eating is derailing, it's always sleep. And it's always, you know, I just need a few nights of like 9 to 10 hours, 10 hours preferable typically, because I'm usually trying to catch up. But it's always because I've been staying up late, or something's happened. You know, I've had a sick kid and I've been up, you know, multiple times in the night. You know, it's always something like that that is the trigger for me. And so it's always fixing sleep that is how I get back on the bandwagon. So fixing sleep, and then for me, it's the habitual, you know, like it's basically being around the food at times where it's easy for me to eat. So sometimes it's just a question of, you know, changing where I put my computer and where I'm working. So I'm not working, you know, at a place where it's easy to have, you know, a snack beside me. Or sometimes it's a question of putting something that's on the kitchen counter, like in a cupboard, so that I can't see it. So I'm not walking past it and remembering about it. So sometimes it's like little tricks like that that can really help. But it's a real challenge, I think. You know, one of the things that I know I hear a lot of comments about whenever I have these conversations on social media with my readers is like, what do you do when you need to do that and the people around you are not supportive? You know, what do you do when your spouse, you know, wants to have dessert every night and wants you to have dessert with them? And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, and we've talked about this many times, of sort of having that conversation with the people in your household and making sure that they all know what your goals are, so that they can be supportive and make sure that at least, you know, they've figured out how to support you, even if they're not going to make the changes for themselves, because you know, can't force, no matter how healthy the changes, you can't force it on anyone else. They need to figure out that they want to do that for themselves. Well, okay, you can force it on a 2-year-old. But even then, you can't make a 2-year-old eat. You can put food in front of them, but you can't actually make them eat. So, you know, talking with the members of your household and making sure that that you've got a plan for how that they can support you. And I'm sure that Matt has been, I mean, Matt's amazing. So I'm sure that Matt's been doing things to support you as you're sort of addressing.
Yeah. And I think that was part of it, was I had to communicate to him what I needed, because I was coming to him every evening and saying, I want something sweet. And I would be specific about what it was that I wanted. And he's so accommodating, and he loves to do nice things for me, that, you know, we had to have a conversation and say, as much as making these things for me when I have a whim for a craving is nice, it's not actually nice insofar as what it's doing to my long-term health and what my real goals are. And so going forward, if I say to you that I want something, let's come up with ideas of things that are good choices. And we came up with a list of things that, you know, I had been eating, like I said, before tour, that I really enjoy and that usually would be completely satisfying. But because I was on that negative cycle, I was craving sugar in a much more drastic sort of way. And so now I have, you know, like, I really like the brewed cacao that we talked about. In the evenings is kind of a sweet tea option for me. I know that you said that there's caffeine in it, but I'm really sensitive to caffeine and it doesn't bother me for some reason.
It's a very small amount compared to something like coffee or black tea. There is some, but it's very small.
Yeah, I for some reason it doesn't affect, and I'm usually really sensitive to caffeine, but it doesn't affect me. So
can't do it in the evenings myself.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, is for me, I'm able to do it in the evenings, but for others, maybe that wouldn't work. But I have things that are on my list, an apple with sun butter, or, you know, frozen mango, or things that are definitely sweet, that, you know, get me through if I'm like feeling the need for ice cream. But it's so, such a better choice. And as time goes on, I'm not really interested in those things anymore, you know? And so, it's very helpful to come up with a plan.
So I have learned very, very much for myself from basically doing this It gets easier every time, but basically having to drag myself back on the wagon a few times a year for the last, decade. Well, I guess I got good at it about 7 years ago. So about the last 7 years though, periodically having to, drag myself back on the wagon. I know for myself that it's about the 10 to 14 day mark where all of a sudden it goes from really putting effort into it into, oh, okay, I got it now. I'm back. And it's sort of, it's not like it's really, really hard for those, the first 3 or 4 days are the worst, but then it's the 10 or 14 day mark in there where it sort of clicks. Do you have an amount of time where it suddenly clicks for you? Do you have that kind of wide range of experience that I have in dragging yourself back on the wagon? Or am I the only one?
No, you're not the only one. I do agree with you that it's gotten better over time. And for me, I personally think that window is more 3 to 4 days. If I'm actually drinking water and sleeping and eating nutrient-dense foods and avoiding sugars, and I would also add to that, eating an adequate amount of non-sweet carbohydrate is also very helpful for me. If I'm doing all those kinds of things, then I find within several days that I feel better. For example, this time it was only 3 days before I started realizing that I was smiling more and I had a little skip to my step and I had more energy and all of those kinds of things that are really telltale signs for me. Not just am I craving sugar at night, but overall health is really an emotional and physical state for me. And I noticed a positive improvement in only a couple of days. So,
I get a boost at the 3 to 4 day mark, but the part where I really feel it's discipline and willpower and commitment that I sort of have to continue on that path, that part lasts about 10 to 14 days. And then all of a sudden the healthy choices are coming naturally and I don't really need to think about it anymore. That's sort of more what I meant. But it sounds like you kind of have it all clicked together at the 4 day mark, which makes me feel very, very jealous that it takes me that much longer to get back on track.
I'm sorry. I don't know. It's not to say that I was walking.
It's good to maybe have the two different yeah. perspectives there yeah. for people, because that means that if someone's taking a week or 2 weeks, that doesn't make them crazy.
No, definitely. And I would say that in years ago, that's probably more apt to what it was. And I think that the longer I do this, I think the easier it is for my body to get back in the rhythm, for sure. So with that said, I'm super excited that I have worked out and I'm getting back on track and eating clean things. And I'm really hoping that Christmas goes smoothly. And I need to communicate to everyone in my life that I do not want Santa to bring me any candy in my stocking. and of course, I plan on eating a very moderate and planned amount of traditional Christmas foods with my boys. And I plan to not eat any more of them once they're gone. And I've done a great job this week, despite the fact that there were goodies in the house, of not eating them. So I'm hoping that, going strategically off the wagon for one day will hopefully not derail me, but we'll see how that goes when we touch base next week. And I hope that whether, you choose to indulge or not to choose to indulge or whatever it is, that everybody has a wonderful holiday season. And Sarah and I would love to see you on tour. If you're anywhere even remotely close to Nashville, Tennessee, Minneapolis, Minnesota, or Toronto, Canada, all of those locations for January 2nd through January 4th have been confirmed. We have the Eventbrite links in the show notes and on the sidebar of our blogs where you can find out about events. So please come see us, bring your books, get them signed, or buy books at the event themselves. And we wish everyone a very happy new year. Even though there'll be one more show before the new year, we still wish you a happy holidays and happy
you
new year.
You can never say happy anything coming up in the future enough times, as far as I'm concerned. Especially after an entire show talking about mental health. I think ending on this positive, I hope everything is awesome for you all the time, is the best thing we could possibly say. It's and true. I do. I hope everything is awesome for everybody all the time, because that would make everybody happy, and then that would make me happy.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Oh, you're going to be distracting, aren't you? Oh, yes, you are. You're going to be so distracting for me. You can't walk on my computer. No, you can't. No. Sorry.
I had you on mute. It's okay. I was making fun of you faces over here, but it was adorable.
I just start sciencing. I just made up that verb, by the way. Sarah is sciencing again. See, it's good. Sarah is sciencing. That could be a hashtag.